E2. Number 17A.
We take now the prophets, and naturally I do not want to interpret the prophets closely. That's in the Bible, and my interpretation in a rather biggish way, without going into any detail, is in my book, The Minor Prophets in the Light of Christian Science. And as I've said, I only did analyze these prophets for the one and only purpose to find the place value of each prophet within the matrix of the Christ, so that we would feel out what is the great problem that the prophet saw, and to put it in such terms and in such a rendering that it is applicable to our everyday life. So what I'm going to do is that I go quickly through these prophets and tell you, so to say, off the cuff, what is the main aspect of each prophet in order to bring out really the point of intersection that we have now in the matrix. So, you see, I go a step further than what we did yesterday with the textbook, where I said, transfer the findings into the boxes. Now, I go out from those two indices and try to show you what must be in the box, so that if those two indices are right and stated right, we can, in a deductive way, feel what must be there. I start out with Hosea as the first one, and Hosea is showing us really that God is the great power whose purpose is to manifest good alone. So you can hear at once first that he is going to show us something about the monopotency of God's good, stating that God is good and that God is only manifesting himself as good, and therefore not to let evil manifest itself also. Or we could even say, perhaps even more clearly stated, that it states that everything that starts not from God can never be good, can never have a good result. Can you see how simple this point of intersection is? Let me put it again this way. We have as the A, the Christ. What is the Christ in all those 16 prophets? Is always that concept that God comes to man. It's always God coming to us. That's the Christ, the divine message from God to men. Can you hear the standpoint? It is not the word standpoint, because the word standpoint would just show what God is. Here it is showing that in being there is a Christ power at work, which always has one thing to do, that God comes to. Therefore, when we read all these prophets in the Bible, you will always feel that this is the direction in which the text is written. Very, very seldom you have that you go to God in the prophets. And only then do they say, return to the Lord, because the whole prophecy is coming from God, and say, God is coming to the people, and therefore return to the Lord. But the message is always from God to men. And therefore spiritually, see, we should culture now the tone that we feel, even without thinking or without understanding, that we feel that we are just under that terrific waterfall, so to say, that terrific way of blessing, that goes out from God to men. Now, can you see even if we only would catch that tone alone from the prophets, we would have caught something enormously big, because then from that point on, we would never feel anymore that we have to work up to God, that we have somehow to use God for our purposes, that we have to make God work. All that would be cut right out. So the first big element in that law is the Christ always saying, from the infinite one comes one infinite idea. So just keep that through every one of those 16 prophets in your spiritual ear, that it is always from God to men. That's the Christ as the subject of the Christ matrix. And so in Hosea, we would have to see that Christ comes to us as the Word, namely stating that Christ that comes to us is an omnipotent power, the omnipotent power of God bringing to us only good, so that God can only achieve good. And the moment I have said that, I have defined the horizontal, namely the divine purpose. You see how it starts, that it says there is a Christ, the A, then comes the vertical that says that Christ comes to us and does what? It is the power of God's good. Therefore, what is the purpose? To show that only the mono, that only God can bring about something good. Therefore, you have the horizontal, therefore, no other power, no other cause can bring forth something good. And this is the whole story of Hosea. He shows that very nicely, that, for instance, he says, for the ways of the Lord are right, and the just shall walk in them, but the transgressors shall fall therein. Can you see? He has the mono way. He has not a dual way. He does not say the right are walking in the way of God and the unrighteous are not walking in the way of God. He says it very clearly that there is a way, the way of God, and the righteous succeed in that. And the unrighteous that walk therein, that walk in that right one, shall not succeed. So he goes and shows that through 7 subjects, right through the word order. He shows how with every synonymous term he would show actually this fundamental thing, which I think every Christian Scientist learns, so to say, at the beginning, and which one would say to everybody and says, look here, God is good and God is almighty, and so he only brings out the good. Therefore, and now that's the second side, therefore everything which does not start with God cannot stand in it, will not succeed, has no success. That very simple law which we all know. Here it is stated in Hosea. So that's an easy presentation of a fundamental starting point. And you can see that therefore we can say, all right, if I go along the matrix line, not the metaphysical line, I go along the matrix line, then all what I should really entertain in consciousness is that very fact that if I go out from God, from mind, then I see that only mind brings forth the ideas of good, namely the ideas of mind, and they alone are good. Therefore, if I do not start with mind, but with anything else, nothing good can come out of it. That's all there is said in that. If we go further to the prophet Joel, then the prophets add a further step to that very law of Hosea. And so I first have to tell you what the prophet Joel is telling in a few words. What is his story? His story is all about that there is an army, a big army of palmer worms, locusts, canker worms, and caterpillars, a whole army, and it depicts how that whole army of these creepy, crawling things just come along and come along, and nothing can stop them. It just depicts how they come and how they come, and that they go through the ranks of the opposing army, just go through, nothing can stop them, that they creep up the walls of the city, that they go into every house and into every house, they creep into every room and to every little corner. Can you see? And nothing can stop it. Gives you a little bit of creeps, doesn't it? Yeah. So just depicting in the first, third part of it, just depicting how here the army of animal magnetism just comes along, and it seems that nothing could stop it, and that it penetrates every little corner of our life and creeps in everywhere into our house, into our mentality. And then comes a turn. In the middle of the story comes a turn where it says, "And the Lord shall utter his voice before his army," and before his army. You see, suddenly that army there of palmer worms and locusts and canker worms and caterpillars are suddenly defined as the army of the Lord. Can you see that retranslation suddenly taking place? That renaming suddenly taking place, that suddenly the prophets would call that army that was creeping in everywhere the army of the Lord. And when he called it the army of the Lord, he said, "And I will restore to you the years that the locusts have eaten, the cankerworm and the caterpillars and the palmer worm, my great army which I sent among you." Can you see that suddenly the prophet said, this army here of these creepy crawlings, which came along and nothing could stop it, and were trying to eat up everything you had, is my army, the army of the Lord, suddenly. And he said, and if you see that, it will restore everything that they have eaten up. That tremendous translation taking place, that tremendous compensation taking place. At what point? At the point when consciousness has no more a dualistic sense of what's going on. When consciousness begins to see that there is only the army of the Lord and not two armies. That there are not two armies, the armies of the locusts and palmer worms and canker worms and caterpillars, and then a second army, the army of the Lord. But that there is only one army, and it's just a matter of how we look at it. And so he ends his whole story really by showing that the country flourishes again and the joyous prosperity. So indicating actually that there is a great translation taking place if we see what? If we see the point of intersection. If we go out from the Christ which comes to us, if there is always that infinite power coming to us as the monopotency of what? Of only good. Only good, no duality. That if we take that consciousness, that at the point of intersection with the Christ horizontal, the translation is enforced. You have there in the horizontal, if you look at it, the enforcement of retranslation. And you can see that the army of the locust is retranslated into the army of the Lord, that the land that lays waste is retranslated in a flourishing country. And so it shows that it is all a matter of our consciousness, that if we take on really that Christ consciousness, that at that point we begin to see that the monopotency, the mono, not just the potency of God's good, showing this is the only power, and therefore showing that there is no other power that can be at work, and so it does what? In the Christ horizontal, it enforces the retranslation of what we felt was animal magnetism, and the effect of animal magnetism both is retranslated. The belief in animal magnetism and the effect of animal magnetism, and as a compensation, we have everything flourishing again. Yeah. So can you see that this prophet goes one step further than Hosea? You see? Or shall I repeat it? So, never quite know how clear I have put it, but you see, in Hosea, no translation takes place. Because Hosea has just stated that which comes from God is good, and that which does not come from God is not successful. Full stop. Period. Whereas Joel goes on and says, and that which is not from God is a false concept and will be retranslated into something good, so that it is also successful. He doesn't have any more the law. You see, Hosea shows us the law of cause and effect in two ways. If I start with God as cause, I have a good effect. If I start with another cause, which is outside of God, I have an evil effect. So you have two laws of causality, a positive and negative one. Whereas in Joel, he shows there are not two at work. There is only one at work and takes the evil belief and retranslates it into the divine. It enforces the retranslation of animal magnetism. So that we actually see all what is about animal magnetism is that we do not start from the Christ. If we don't start from the Christ, then it is animal magnetism. It's as easy as that. Because animal magnetism is the counterfeit of the Christ. The Christ says, start from God and never leave that standpoint. Always go along that standpoint. Reason right down to the last digit along the way of the Christ. And then you have the idea manifesting itself. At the moment you leave that standpoint, this is animal magnetism. You believe in another cause, in another origin, in another power than God. Okay, let's go to the next one, Amos. So Amos again should show us about the monopotency of God. Good. Now, Amos' prophecy, I can try to sum up the story again, just in an overall view, and just show how he starts out and really shows that power of God. The Lord roars from Zion. You just hear that lion of Zion, huh? Make roaring down. Ah, here I come. Huh? He roars, huh? From Zion. Zion is always that symbol of the highest mental or spiritual attitude of holiness. So the Lord roars from Zion. The roaring, it's not just tender. It's that might, that Christ power. You can hear again that utters his voice. And utters his voice, sending fire to devour the places, the palaces of evil. And then he goes on and on and on and shows how the Lord really sends fire to this city, to that city, to these palaces and those palaces, always giving a sense that everything is that is not of God is destroyed. That the fires destroy and devour everything and annihilate everything. So that at the end of the prophecy, it just shows that the last remnant of evil is tracked down and annihilated too. He goes right to the last bit. And all through Amos, you just have that sense, you see, that God or truth destroys all phenomena of evil. Just like that. Can you see how that is the point of intersection which we have in Christianity? That in Christianity we have now one step further, namely that actually through the translation in Joel, you arrive actually at Amos, where you see that there is nothing evil left over, that all evil is wiped out, that the fires of God have really wiped out every evil. So actually, if we go back again and see what is the place value, we could see the Christ here is indicated. Here he roars from Zion. He comes down from the hills and utters his voice, the Christ coming constantly as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, as that omnipotence, that monopotency of God's good, which says all that there is evil has no place in that realm of good. It's being devoured, is wiped out. You see that this is a new tone that has not been yet discussed in the preceding two prophets. In the first prophet, you only had that if you go out from a wrong course, that you have a wrong effect, but it hasn't said that it is wiped out. But then in Joel it has said, try to see that what seems to be evil is actually no evil, but is just a false understanding of good, and that retranslates your experience. And if it retranslates your experience, that actually then nothing evil is left, and you have Amos. That then evil is wiped out, and that's Amos. But can you see the logic of it, and that we have to think matrix-wise? Because Amos is that which we would state very often in Christian Science. Because very often we would state that truth annihilates error, that life annihilates death. All that, those terms of annihilation, destroying, what other synonymous terms you have about destroying and annihilating and so on, are quite are terms that appear over and over in the textbook and in the Christian Science discussion and thought, and naturally per se are right, but we have to see where that happens, namely that it is Amos. Now, if it is Amos, it means that we shouldn't start our treatment that way, or that we shouldn't really have our attitude towards error right from the standpoint of Amos. Or all what we have is that we try to destroy something and have nothing in its place. And we try to destroy something without seeing from where we take the power to do it. Therefore, if we just always have that sense, well, truth will destroy error, love will destroy hate, life will destroy death. You see, you have a destructive sense, and actually you have a dualistic sense. It's within one's consciousness, one builds up an opposite, and something you just have to knock down with all your might, with all your knowledge of the synonymous term, you just have to knock down and it destroys. And that is actually the way, say, we handle evil. We will see that this way is usually the way how Mr. Dawley presented the handling of evil, because the handling of evil would go out actually from the synonymous term and would see, for instance, when he started out, usually in the inverted word order, that he would start out from perfection and see that that perfection is a law of annihilation to everything unlike itself. Yes? So he would go right through the seventh synonymous term, always seeing that that is a law of annihilation to its opposite. And this is a very good way of handling evil. But one must see at which point that appears. If this would be the only law detached from the whole matrix form, from the whole matrix structure, then it would, after a while, give you a sense, my word, I have really a terrific enemy, and I have to work every day that I can knock down that enemy. And it can build up, really, a dualistic sense if one is not careful. Yes, so, but if we see that this law of handling evil is not an initial law, but is actually the outcome of Hosea and Joel, then we have built up first something in our consciousness which gives a compensation for what is being destroyed. Through Hosea we see there is constantly at work something, namely the divine purpose in Hosea. You see now you have the point of intersection, the divine purpose defined. In Hosea you have the divine purpose where we get that wonderful feel we are constantly under the shower, under the waterfall of that blessing that comes right down from God and wants to bring out only good, and that everything that does not start from there cannot do anything good. That we feel that we are no more tempted to use another course in order to build up something good. And when we have that, we begin to realize that this blessing that comes down from God through the Christ comes down as the only potency of God's good at the point of Joel is enforcing a translation. Actually, it translates our standpoint, where we see that we are working out from God and no more from the caterpillars and the canker worms and from animal magnetism and all the creepy crawling funny thoughts and opinions and human opinions which we have and which we calculate and so on, so that we can see that actually through that translation everything is being destroyed what is not from God. So that in Amos the feeling of destruction is much more the outcome of a retranslation. And that's something very different than if it's just the knocking down of an opposite.